of the department, ably led by the Minister of Tourism, Minister Derek Anekom. Welcome to our portfolio committee meeting, where we are going to be having a briefing of the department on their APP, on the strategic plan and the budget of the department. Let me take this opportunity to welcome everybody and allow for introduction. I will start from this side.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. My name is Jerry Bolton. I'm the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism.
I am Lusizo Makubela Mashele, the Acting Secretary of the Portfolio Committee. Acting Chair of the Portfolio Committee. Apologies for that.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Sufu Zwayo. I'm the content advisor for the committee.
Thank you, Tembala Mxeko, a member of the committee. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair, and DM, Honorable Members, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Manuku Masel, member of this committee from Limpopo Province. Thank you.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Patricia Adams, proudly a member of this committee.
Morning, members and the minister. Thank you. I am Vatiswa Bam Mugwanya, member of this, new member of this committee. I'm just starting today, and I come from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Derek Anukom, in the industry they call me Uncle Derek, and I'm the Minister of Tourism, and I'm really happy to be back with you.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Nomzamo Mopingu. I'm the Chief Director for Strategy and Systems in the Department of Tourism.
Good morning, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister and colleagues. My name is Victor Tarage. I'm the Accounting Officer.
Good morning, Honourable Members and the Minister. My name is Murunga Rampili, DDG for Domestic, DDG for Tourism Sector Support Services.
Good morning, Honourable Members, Minister, colleagues. I'm the DDG responsible for Tourism Research Policy and International Relations.
Good morning, Honourable Members and Honourable Minister. My name is Shamila Chetier, and I'm the DDG responsible for Destination Development.
Good morning, Honourable Members, Minister and colleagues. My name is Lula Maduma. I'm the DDG responsible for Corporate Management.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Nurunisa Mula. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Libuani Nemuteng, Director for Strategic Management in the Department. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Thabo Makubedu. I'm the Director, Executive Support in the Office of the DG.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Members. I'm Pietro van Niekerk. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Director General.
Morning, Minister, Members. Ralph Ackerman, I'm the Chief Financial Officer.
Welcome, Honourable Krombok. We had just concluded our introductory session. Perhaps I would hand over to you that you just do a brief introduction of yourself.
I thought you just introduced me yourself, Chair. But thanks. Apologies for being late. My name is Greg Krumbach. I represent the Democratic Alliance on this portfolio, and I'm from KwaZulu-Natal.
thank you very much. I would now hand over to you, Minister, leading the department on the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm actually not going to say any start with any introductory words. I hand directly over to the department to present the APP, unless you insist. That's okay. Thank you. So if I can hand over to the Director General. Oh, you're doing it.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. We have the outline of the presentation on slide 2. What perhaps we should emphasize is that there has not been a change of strategy. The strategy is still the same strategy that was tabled at the beginning of the term that we are actually implementing as we progress. What we will be tabling here is the annual performance plan for the year 2018-2019 financial. We have the first few slides that essentially just recap what the strategy is about, our vision, which is leading sustainable tourism development for inclusive economic growth in South Africa, and the mission, which is to grow an inclusive and sustainable tourism economy through good corporate corporate and cooperative governance, strategic partnerships and collaborations, innovation and knowledge, as well as effective stakeholder communication. Slide 4 deals with where we derive our mandate from, and we are fully aligned to the NDP, and indeed we are pursuing the objectives of the Tourism Act as our primary mandate. We do have levers, if one could call them that, that assist us with our persuasion for objectives around radical socio-economic transformation and achievement of inclusive growth in the growth of tourism, and this would be amongst others policy instruments that we use, development of people that would be issues around enterprise development, issues around skills development, and the list goes on, and also issues that relate to destination development, in particular development of the various places that are of critical importance with regards to development of tourism. I will not go through the details of the goal statements and so on. Suffice to say that we have maintained our strategic outcome-orientated goals, starting with the achievement of good corporate and cooperative governance. Slide 7, increase the tourism sector's contribution to inclusive economic growth. Slide 8 begins to outline the actual strategic objectives against each of the goals that I've just outlined, and the outcomes-oriented goals that I've just outlined. So the DDGs are going to go through the different programs, but they will then go through how each of these strategic objectives is actually going to be realized in terms of the implementation that will take place. And we'll do that starting with Program 2, which is policy, tourism research, policy, and international relations. Perhaps I also need to mention that this will be the first time that we are tabling the APP with the new structure in full implementation. So that's why DDG at one stage she thought she's still DDG domestic, but she's no longer DDG domestic. That post does not exist anymore. So we will then take their input, which will commence from And you would have noted that I would have passed the NTSS in terms of the focus of the NTSS, the various pillars, and I would have passed the targets for the NTSS and so on. This is just to demonstrate that all that we do is informed by the NTSS, informed by the Tourism Act, informed by the National Development Plan. So we will take slide 14 and DDG Malan will start from there.
Thank you, DG. Honourable members, Chair, if you allow me, I'm going to focus on the annual targets and not go into the quarterly targets for the interest of time. But if there are any questions in terms of the quarterly targets, I can return to those. So starting on slide 14, program 2, that focus on tourism research policy and international relations, and the purpose there is just then to enhance strategic policy environment, monitor the tourism sector's performance, and enable stakeholder relations. Okay, in summary, on slides 15 and 16, this program 2, contributes to 4 strategic objectives, i.e. 3, 7, 9, and 11, and to 6 program performance indicators, which I will highlight now in detail. Referring to slide 17, that slide talks to PPI number 1 and it refers to the number of policy development initiatives that we will undertake. For the next financial year, we are targeting 2. Those relate to quarterly analysis reports on our airlift developed to inform our stakeholder engagement. And the other one is on quarterly analysis reports specifically on visa requirements to also inform our stakeholders' engagement on these specific matters. On slide 18, comes to PPI number 2 that talks to the number of information dissemination platforms hosted. These are platforms that we utilize to disseminate information, research, that we have done throughout the year and so on. The first platform relates to our annual tourism public lecture, which we usually do in aligning it to the UNWTO theme, World Tourism Day, for World Tourism Day celebrations, but we do adapt the theme for our domestic circumstances. The second annual target refers to our annual tourism research seminar that we host. At that seminar, we do disseminate the research that was done throughout the year and the students that we supported financially, the postgraduate students, also have an opportunity to showcase posters during that event. Slide number 19 refers to PPI 3, number of tourism monitoring and evaluation reports developed. That refers to slide 19 and 20, and honourable members, 22 reports will be delivered under that PPI. The first one is our annual NTSS implementation report. That's where we indicate how far we are in terms of the implementation of the National Tourism Sector Strategy, and we've been doing it annually. The second target refers to the State of Tourism Report. We develop a State of Tourism Report annually and publish that one. That is target number 2. Target number 3, quarterly we develop a tourism fact sheet with specific indicators, which is available on our website, and target number 3 refers to that. Target number 4 is we do a monthly analysis on the tourist arrival figures as published by Statistics South Africa, so we do couple of pages on analysis on the tourist arrivals, and those figures or those reports are also available on our website. Then from our monitoring and evaluation team, we will do monitoring of our capacity building projects in the next financial year, and we also will do an impact evaluation, an independent impact evaluation on our capacity building program to get an understanding of what we have gained from implementing, the impact that it had through implementation. On slide 21, referring to the seventh target for PPI 3, refers to the monitoring of our infrastructure projects. So we will continue to do the monitoring of the infrastructure projects that are implemented in one of the other branches. Target number 8 refers to our bilateral agreements that we sign with countries abroad. And that report will give an indication of the where we are in terms of the implementation of the signed agreement. Coming to slide number 22 and PPI 4, the number of information systems developed and maintained. We will develop 3 systems. The first one is the development of the National Tourism Information Management System, as called for in the Tourism Act, and specifically the supply side data database, as we are prioritizing that one. The second target refers to the development, which is, will be a subsection of the bigger database, but specifically focused on black-owned products and services. And the third system is the development of a biometric time and attendance system for the EPWP projects with the aim of monitoring attendance and for records, improving record keeping. On slide number 23, it refers to the second last PPI, which is the number of initiatives facilitated in multilateral fora and bilateral cooperation and regional integration. There are 5 initiatives under that BPI. The first 3 refers to the work that we will be doing in EORA during our chairship, the period that we are chairing. The first annual target refers to a EORA workshop on coastal and marine tourism that also links to the Oceans Pakisa initiative. And that will be hosted during Indaba this year, and that's why it only goes up to quarter 2 in terms of the deliverables. We will also host the EORA Tourism Expert Meeting on the margins of Indaba, and that's in preparation for the third target on that slide, which is the Tourism Ministers Meeting that we will host later in this year. So those are 3 of the initiatives that we will be driving as part of our chairship of EORA. On slide 24, it's the remaining 2 annual targets under this PPI. The first one refers to our sharing of best practices workshop. That is our annual workshop which is specifically focused on countries in Africa that we sign bilateral agreements with. And one of the objectives is the implementation of the MOUs through the sharing of best practices, but it has expanded to not only include African countries. So that is referring to target number 4. And target number 5 is our annual ministerial session that Minister hosts during Indaba. Slide number 25 refers to the last PPI, PPI 6, that this program contributes to, the number of capacity building programs implemented. That annual target is the trained youth placed for the National Tourism Information Management System data collection. That, honorable members, is a continuation of the program that we started in the current financial year in the in the sense that the youth will be placed and the data collection will start and it will feed into the system that I referred to earlier that we will develop to populate the database. Thank you, Honourable Members. That concludes Program 2. Hand over to Information Development.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to follow DDG Milan's example and just talk to our annual performance targets. Destination development, in a nutshell, is about constantly developing our physical places, our experiences and our routes. So if you think about it as a pipeline, it deals with ideas, concepts. It takes them through pre-feasibility and feasibility. There's work that is done around finding the money to make this happen, so it's investment facilitation. And then we actually, through our EPWP program, fund the construction of certain elements of work and then hand over. So that, in a nutshell, is what the purpose of our team is to constantly have projects in a places perspective that are under implementation. Slide 27 talks to the two objectives that we deal with. So we deal with diversifying and enhancing tourism offerings. There are two performance indicators under that. The one is related to planning initiatives, and the second one related to destination enhancement initiatives. And then the second objective is around creating employment opportunities. And that relates to our expanded public works program and full-time equivalent jobs that we create through that. Slide 28, essentially in our briefing on the expanded public works program, we are going to be implementing the standard for infrastructure procurement and delivery management in the management of our infrastructure projects. These simply outline the stages. So some of the challenges that we have previously had around implementation of our infrastructure projects will be attended through the implementation of this new system. I'm not going to go into detail of each of these stages, but I think that when I talk to the infrastructure projects that we are implementing this year, I'll speak a little bit to the outcomes of the stages. We start on then the next slide, which is slide 29, it's the beginning of our destination planning initiatives. So one of the challenges that we have nationally, and that means in each of the provinces, is that there isn't sufficient planning done in order for us to develop new tourism products, new attractions, new experiences. So a lot of the work that we are doing in the space around planning initiatives deals in some ways with our coastal and marine tourism area of work. It also deals with destination planning and precinct planning initiatives. So members will recall that in this year's APP, we actually developed a destination planning manual, and we developed a precinct planning manual using Vilakazi Street as our basis. The first two targets here are about working in each of the provinces. So the first target is about our destination planning manual, to actually plan for destinations within each of the 9 provinces, using our planning manual as a tool. The second one then is about precinct planning, and in this year we are focusing on precinct planning in Khayelitsha and in the Karoo region, to actually develop the precincts aligned with the work that we're doing. Both of those initiatives are aligned with the coastal and marine tourism area of work. The next slide then talks to a series of master plans. All of this work is aligned to our coastal and marine tourism area of work. So we are in fact developing 9 master plans over the next 2 years. The first is the Sutherland to Carnarvon Master Plan, and this is aligned with the SKA and the developments around the SKA to actually link it with science tourism. The second one is Honda Club Bay to Port Nolloth. The third one is Port St. John's to Coffee Bay. The fourth one is at the Orange River Mouth. The sixth The eighth plan is around the Claim Sea Beach Precinct, which is in the Northern Cape. And then the last one is the Haunted Kambai and McDougall's Bay campsites. So these are really about planning for broader developments. Some of them may be new. Others of them are about enhancing the actual products that exist in that space. The 10th initiative related to this is exactly about creating that pipeline of infrastructure projects, which our planning work will then help us say needs to be implemented at various levels. So this pipeline ensures that we are consistently creating new tourism products and experiences aligned with the demand. So this is not something that is about just creating things without looking at the demand. So it's about matching the demand that we have for tourism experiences with the supply area of work. The next and the last one is really about taking forward the work on budget resorts and developing an ownership and operational model for the budget resorts. And this, of course, is about ensuring that we address the needs around domestic tourism. Our next slides then deal with the destination enhancement initiatives that we are actually implementing. The first two projects members of the committee will be well aware of. They are multi-year infrastructure projects implemented in partnership with Sandparks. So this is the development of Shangoni Gate and the Phalaborwa Wild Activity Hub, both that are aligned to the Kruger National Park. The next set of initiatives are about implementing universal access projects. We did an assessment of various parks across the country, and from that assessment we are now actually going to implement retrofitting, if you call it that, and upgrade to those facilities to ensure universal access. The parks that we have are working with next year is the Blade River Canyon in Mpumalanga, Hilltop Rest Camp in KZN, the Gariep Dam in the Free State, the Dwesa Square Bay Nature Reserve in the Eastern Cape. And then the next set of initiatives are donor-funded initiatives. We put together a proposal together with the provinces and the Sandparks in the first instance for the Dinosaur Interpretation Center. And the second one is actually work at Bavianskloof to develop a leopard trail and an interpretation center at that World Heritage Site. The dinosaur project will, in fact, go into construction this year. Our planning is complete. That project is funded, both of them, in fact, are funded from EU funding. And the total value of that project is $120 million. The second project is one that we've just received funding for, which is Bavianskloof World Heritage Site. That's an amount of $56 million also that is donor funded. And there are two aspects of that project. The leopard trail will commence with construction this year. The interpretation center actually will be in terms of sorting out the detailed planning. The next slide talks to work that I think honourable members are also familiar with. This is about creating interpretive signage at the sites. Interpretive signage is really telling the story of tourism at those specific sites. We focused on national sites, sites of national significance. And this year, aligned with the work that we're doing at the UA, we are working at the Hlukhluwe Nature Reserve, the Mthombathi Nature Reserve in the Eastern Cape, Dwesa Square Bay in the Eastern Cape, the Sitsikama National Park, and then the Blade River Canyon and the FKA Karoo Node. We're continuing our work on the Indian Atlantic route. This is also aligned to the coastal and marine tourism area of work. Honourable members will recall that we have completed a supply and demand study this year. Next year, what we are actually doing is doing the gap analysis between those two things and working out an implementation plan for each of the four coastal provinces. The next slide, please. The very last indicator that we have is related to full-time equivalents. This is the highest number of jobs that we are going to create through our expanded public works program. We're targeting 6,355 full-time equivalents this year. And the reason that we're targeting that is actually based on the planning that we have done, both from a skills development and an infrastructure perspective. So this target is based on the actual work that we've already procured for, or that we know that we're procuring for. And I think that in our last meeting, we briefed the committee on the GTEC findings. And I think that some of the challenges we've experienced in this program are now going to be a thing of the past. And this is the reason that we have this high target for this year. I think it's also in responsiveness to the really high rate of unemployment that we are targeting this number. That's the last target, and I'm going to hand over to DDG Rampele.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members, once more. I'm going to present on Program 4, which is Tourism Sector Support Services. Its purpose is to enhance transformation of the sector, increase skills levels, and support development to ensure that South Africa is a competitive tourism destination. The strategic outcome-oriented goal is to increase the tourism sector's contribution to inclusive economic growth. We have three strategic objectives that we are responding to, which is Strategic Objective 5, which is to accelerate the transformation of the tourism sector. Strategic Objective 6, which is to facilitate the development and growth of tourism enterprises to contribute to inclusive economic growth and job creation. The third strategic objective is number 7, which is to facilitate tourism capacity building programs. The annual target that we've come up with is in terms of the to promote BBBE implementation. We have three initiatives, which is to monitor the implementation of the amended tourism BBBE sector code, which is done with together with the Chapter Council, and the following one is on the secretarial services that we are offering to the Chapter Council. Normally we are having one meeting per quarter. The third one is on women in tourism empowerment initiatives that we'll be doing, which is in terms of ensuring that we have platforms that the women can really interact, as well as the Women in Tourism Conference, which we hold annually, and the workshops that we hold with the women in terms of ensuring that they are empowered. The other annual target is on domestic tourism initiatives, which we'll be supporting. We will be coming up with a framework to support tour operators so that we facilitate domestic tourism. The other area is to ensure that you come up with a scheme which will be able to respond to the issues of ensuring that we start increasing the numbers related to the domestic tourism. The last of the three is tours for designated groups, here referring to the youth, the elderly, and people with disabilities, to ensure that we start to inculcate that culture of travel, especially among the previously disadvantaged individuals. Then we have on enterprise development. We are going to support 400 SMMEs countrywide in terms of ensuring that their financial management accounts are in place for them to be able to access the funding which they can get either from the private sector or the public sector. At the same time, we'll continue to support the incubators that we have already established. So far, we have 4, and we are saying in the next financial year, we'll be coming up with 2 new incubators. Then we have the incentive program, where we have 4 sub-programs under it, which is the market access support program, which we are ensuring that our SMMEs are able to be supported for them to go to the trade platforms for them to sell their services. Then we have also tourism grading support program, which is facilitated by our entity to ensure that we get establishments to be graded so that we can increase or make sure that we have quality assured in these premises. The energy efficiency, which is Green Tourism Incentive Program, we are running this together with IDC to ensure that there is that retrofit in terms of ensuring that energy efficiency is done well in these premises. We are hoping that we'll be able to also bring in the water aspect into this resource efficiency measure. Then we have the Sector Transformation Fund, which we have already started this year, partnered with NEF to ensure that we assist the emerging black enterprises or businesses to be able to grow into the market, even the new entrants to come in as part of transforming the sector. I think slide 45 is a repetition of the previous one that I've just referred to. On slide 46, it's on community tourism enterprises developed to enter the tourism value chain. Five communities are indicated here. Basically, here we are saying there are communities around attractions all over the country, but we need to make sure that these communities are able to supply those attractions with across the value chain. Either it's the laundry services, it will be artifacts, or it will be bakery stuff. We're making sure that these communities must also be able to benefit in terms of supplying those services. We have started, and we are saying in the next coming financial year, we'll be making feasibility studies on another five so that we can keep on adding on these communities. The following one is, which is slide 47, is the application of the service excellence standard, which we started some years back. Here we'll be focusing on Kula Information Center, which is within the Coastal Marine Tourism Node, but at the same time, Kula is one of the communities that we are saying they can be able to get value from the St. Lucia area. The Port St. John's as well, the visitor information will be looked into in terms of ensuring the service excellence in that area will be responding properly to the tourists coming into contact with the workers there. Bilansberg National Park, the Visitor Information Center in the Northwest, the same issue in terms of ensuring that service excellence is done at all times. And these are also aligned to the nodes that we have already identified. So we'll be making sure that from the Program 3, where they are doing the infrastructure-related things, will be coming in terms of skills, in terms of service excellence, so that we are able to make sure that there is sustainability. The slide 48 is on Journey to Service Excellence, which we started some 3 years back. We piloted with Upington, and here we are saying we need to go to the small towns as part of helping with the revitalization, which is done by COPTA, and we'll be focusing in Jozini as well as Port St. John's in the Eastern Cape. The following matter will be on the complaints, and here we are saying we need to make sure that we comply to the service chapter in terms of the management of tourist complaints, and we'll be making a lot of awareness in this space, and it will be attached to the safety issues as well of our tourists. The last one on the improving visitor services, it will be the coming up with a framework for accreditation of tourism skills. We are saying this one, we are working together with the Consumer Commission, and we will be able to make sure that the complaints that are received the accredited companies will be able to assist us in ensuring that these are done speedily and in a very efficient manner. The other area is on three joint awareness campaigns, which I've already indicated, in terms of the complaints management, the service excellence, the tourist guiding, as well as the tourism safety. We need to create awareness so that our tourists know where to go to, but at the same time, in terms of resolution of the complaints, we need to be able to do those within the applicable time frame. The following slide, slide 80, is on our skills initiative. Here we are saying for 2018-19, regarding the tourism monitors, we'll be rolling that out to all the provinces, and in total 1,450 tourism monitors will be trained and at the same time posted to various attractions. Slide 51 is on our normal chef program that we do. We will be enrolling 577 unemployed youth into the program. And then the following one is on the Blue Flag Beach Training Program. Here we are saying 200 unemployed youth will be enrolled. And the following one is on the Somalia. 300 unemployed youth will be enrolled as well. And then on the Food Safety Program, 1,500 unemployed young people will also be enrolled for the program. Then the following one is on the Hospitality Youth Program for unemployed youth as well. 600 learners will be enrolled for accommodation, food and beverage. And 2,375 young people will be enrolled in those provinces. We have our NTCE, which we normally run for 3 years in a province. This year the NTCE will be held in Northwest, and it will be from this year till 2020. Our program on executive development for women, we are going to train 40. Already we have started with the 40 through our partner, which is UNISA, School of Business Leadership. The other program in terms of capacity building is on upskilling of our tourist guides. We'll be focusing that in Isimangaliso Wetland Park, as well as the Cape Flora Kingdom. The other area will be in Kruger National Park, and we'll have new entrance into the space, which will be for Eastern Cape as well as Limpopo province. The last, in terms of training of young people, we have the resource efficiency training program, which we started in the current financial year. We trained 60 in three provinces. We'll be moving to the other three provinces, which is Eastern Cape, Free State, and Western Cape. And this is done in partnership with the National Senior Production Center that is in the base in the CSIR. The last one, which is on our IGR area, is on provincial and local government capacity building program, here to ensure that we are able to align our plans and programs to what is happening within the other spheres of government. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. I will speak to Program 1, Corporate Management, whose purpose is to provide strategic leadership, management, and support services to the department. We want to achieve good corporate and cooperative governance. We have two strategic objectives with 10 KPIs and 13 targets. And I will speak to those, starting with slide number 69. There we want to review and implement excuse me, the organizational performance management system to enhance our department's performance, and we'll be developing our strategic documents there. We want to also continue to attract and develop and retain a skilled workforce, and we'll be looking at the indicators there would be our vacancy rate, ensuring that there's representation amongst the target groups, implementing our workplace skills plan, and complying with prescripts on management of labor relations. Slide 60 speaks to, still on strategic objective one, providing optimal ICT services. Want to ensure there that we provide service that's aligned to our strategy and support that strategy. We also want to advocate for departmental resources to ensure that they are economic, efficient, effective use is to achieve our priorities. We want to provide assurance through our internal audit service for good corporate governance. Under strategic objective two, we want to implement awareness and an effective communication strategy, also ensuring that we're able to reach out to our communities in townships as well as rural areas. Strategic objective four, we want to align our expenditure to contribute to black economic empowerment as per the BEF. Going into the targets, with the first one, aligned to the number of strategic documents developed, the target there is to develop our 2019-20 APP. We want to also make sure that we develop our annual performance report for 2017-18 and submit it. We also want to be able to submit our quarterly report. Slide 63 speaks to continuing with the strategic documents. We're going to be developing and presenting our quarterly risk analysis reports to the Risk Management Committee, as well as developing our four oversight reports. PPI 2 with vacancy rate, we still want to maintain it at 8% and not to exceed that rate. Slide 64 speaks to representation of targeted groups. We'll be targeting women, want to maintain it at a minimum of 50%. People with disabilities at 3% minimum. Black representation is 95.1%. So those targets have not changed since our previous one. PPI 4 speaks to implementation of our workplace skills plan, and want to target our training interventions at our employees to address skills gaps within the organization to make sure that they're in line with our structure and our strategy. Slide 65 speaks to compliance with our management of labor relations matters, and want to be able to manage our grievances, misconduct cases, disputes, and collective bargaining, and make sure that we're in compliance with regards to that. And then the next PPI, implementation of our ICT strategic plan. We're going to be revising it and implementing it for the next 5 years to ensure that it aligns to the department's objectives. Slide 66 speaks to the number of quarterly and annual financial statements submitted. We'll be submitting to National Treasury our three quarterly interim financial statements, and also to Treasury and to the Auditor General, our annual financial statement for 2017-18. PPI 8 speaks to implementation of our internal audit plan. We'll be reviewing our organization's activities there to strengthen governance, risk management, and our control processes with that. So want to implement that in full. PPI 9 speaks to implementation of our communication strategy. One of the things we'll be focusing on is to popularize our NTSS the revised NTSS to the public and through our stakeholder engagement. And of course, the developmental aspect of reaching out to townships, rural areas, you know, previous disadvantaged communities will continue with that focus. And on our last slide, it speaks to percentage of procurement from BBBE compliant businesses. This is the one slide where there's a slight change. Previously, the procurement was targeted at BEE enterprises with the contributor levels 1 through 8. We've reduced it now to levels 1 through 5 to ensure that we not only comply with procurement legislation, but we also want to meet our own department's developmental objectives with regards to SMME empowerment. And that is our last slide. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to speak to the budget. The budget is obviously there to fund all the activities that we plan for the 18-19 financial year, and I will therefore concentrate only on the budget for 18-19 financial year. You will also see that we did include also the 17-18 financial year in our presentation, so that you can see how the budget links to the previous year and how it is now in the new year with the focus. Chair, on slide 70, if you look at the pie chart, you can see that 12% of our budget is going to administration, then 56.7% is going to tourism, research policy and international relations. Destination development is getting a share of 17.8%, and the tourism sector for support services is getting a share of 13.6%. Our total budget for the 18-19 financial year is 2.2 billion. If you look at slide 71, which gives you a breakdown of the economic classifications of of our budget, compensation of employees is getting 13.7%. Goods and services is getting 10.9%. Then transfers and subsidies 65.5%, and then our capital assets is 9.9%. You will see that there's quite an increase in our capital assets due to the infrastructure projects. If we go to program 1 on page 72. There it is divided into also the sub-programs in ministry, management, corporate management, financial management, and then office accommodation. The total budget there is 271 million rand, where the biggest component is to the corporate management. It's 63.6%. On page 73 is a breakdown of the economic classifications for program 1, where you can see that the largest component is the compensation of employees, is 54.5%. On slide 74, this is the program 2, the largest component here, which I will indicate to you, is to South African Tourism, our public entity, 1.2 billion rand, and that is 94.2% of this program that is allocated to SA Tourism. That will also be indicated on the next slide, slide 75, which is transfers and subsidies, where you can see that 94.7% of economic classifications is for transfers and subsidies to SA Tourism. Then on slide 76, destination development. The largest component here is the working for tourism, which is 83.3%, and that is 354 million out of a budget of 401 million rand. It is allocated. If you go to slide 77, you will see that on capital assets, because of the working for tourism projects, they received 218 million rand, which is 54.3% of the economic classifications. Then on slide 78, it is our tourism sector support services. Here the largest component is to our tourism incentive program, which is 198 million, 64.8 million rand of the total budget of 306 million rand for this program. If you go to slide 79, obviously you will see that the largest component is under transfers and subsidies, 185 million rand, 60%, 60.5%, which is for the TIP projects. Thank you, Jane.
That concludes the one.
Thank you, DG and your team. Honourable members, here's the presentation before us. Can we engage with it? I will take Honourable Kronborg, followed by Honourable Adams, followed by Honourable Bam and Honourable Kako.
Thank you, Chair, and welcome back, Minister. I hope it's more than just a coincidence that after your first meeting back with us 3 days later, we're going to be introducing electronic visas, which I know my colleague James Fox will be thrilled about, but maybe you should resign and come back more often to get more done. Anyway, that's good on you as well. Thank you for assisting in that regard. Chair, I'd like to just really ask three questions. The first is on page 13. I'm trying to understand the numbers, so it's more of a big picture question. It's not entirely clear to me whether the 2026 targets are adjusted for inflation or not. The slide doesn't say. I don't know if that's real rands or constant rands. If it is adjusted for inflation, then it looks like it's about 12.5% to 13% compound growth every year. If it actually is nominal rands, then I don't know what inflation figure is being assumed to be part of that. If it's around 4 or 5%, then it looks as though the actual growth is about 7% a year. So that could just be clarified. But I ask that because of the figures that are three columns or rows lower, number of total jobs supported by the sector. Okay, you've got the direct jobs, the third row, goes up from nearly 703,000 to 1 million jobs. Okay, now we know that in South Africa, unlike overseas, we don't have 8 tourists creating a job. It's more like 12. That might be one or two out. I don't know what the current figures are, but we've in this committee spoken about 12 tourists creating a job. If it's 12, then that implies there'll be an extra 3.5 million tourists between now and 2026. And if you look at that against the current international arrivals, to take one measurement, it's about a 4% increase compounded per year. So my first question is, do these figures really talk to each other in a way that's internally consistent? Because it seems as if the direct contribution to national GDP is growing a lot faster, even if you take inflation off those figures, than the number of tourists and the number of jobs created. And something is not quite aligning there. They should more or less hold those relationships which we've experienced for a decade. So I'll just ask about that, and maybe some light could be shed on that to try and understand why the income is growing, whatever measurement you use, a lot faster than the actual tourist growth and the job growth. Then On second question is between pages 29 and 31. And this is the destination planning initiatives developed. So there's a fairly lengthy list of various master plans that have been developed, including the square kilometer array in Sutherland, Port St. John's, Coffee Bay, Orange River Mark. Could we just have a little bit more detail? I take it this is something the department is facilitating. It's to presumably create some kind of structure around which private tourist service providers can enhance or market or promote their products. Is this then, when you talk about a master plan, is it then, in your understanding, something which actually says, well, we've got this thing, we're not going to do this ourselves, but we are going to create a developmental or facilitative environment under which local tourist initiatives or tourism initiatives can flourish? Can we just get a better idea, is this a PPP or what exactly is it? And then my last question, Chair, is I'm just wondering to what extent the presenters now have got some preliminary data on our pilot study in the Nordic countries based on the econometric model that we had launched some time ago now, and at the last meeting we were told the thing wasn't implemented but data wasn't yet available. It has been a little bit of time that's elapsed, and I'm wondering whether there are some preliminary results coming through, because the exciting thing about that was what the model indicated and the way it was presented to us when we were in the Marx building was that a relatively small increase in investment, in other words, a marginal increase in investment compared to what we're actually investing at the moment, would actually generate quite a lot more. There was an exponential growth that was presented as a result of the optimal level of advertising being spent. And almost as if the figures were too good to be true. I think we all got very excited when we saw those figures. And hence, you recall, Chairperson, that we decided, or the department had decided to roll out almost like a pilot study, which they use the Nordic countries to be the guinea pig. It has been a while now since we've had that confirmation, and I'm going to keep asking this question because the sooner we can get some hard data on that and we know exactly where we're going, the sooner we can generate the type of tourist increases and the increases to job opportunities and income, which seem to be the byproduct of having the right advertising budget. So if there is some further information, I'd love to hear it. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. And let me also welcome the Minister back. We are glad you're back, sir. Chairperson, I have a range of clarity seeking questions. I'll pose a few and wait for a later opportunity again. My first one is directly to the Minister. Our President launched yesterday a youth employment service initiative. My question, in which government and business and labour and civil society coupled. Now my question to you, Minister, as a tourism sector, is that are there businesses, tourism businesses, also part of this initiative? As this sector is mentioned as a sector that can give a lot of employment. So I'd like to know that. And Chairperson, I've questions on most of the on most of the programs, but as I said, I was just posed a few. Now, your focus areas as departments is on skills development for the sector specific. I want to know, Chairperson DG, do you have a record of the numbers of skills development programs that you have run for the last 4 years that we as committee is here. And as we don't, we have to compile later this year, early next year, a legacy report. And in that legacy report, we must engage how many skills were transferred. And if you do that, please break it up into male, female, youth, and all the previously disadvantaged sectors. Then on a program, on program two, the visa requirements. I must admit, Minister Chairperson, I've seen something in the newspaper over the weekend, and I took it out, brought it to Cape Town to read it, but I haven't read it yet. It says Derek Hanekam about visas. I didn't read it. I think it's in the Cape Times, Sunday Times. Yeah, it's in the Sunday Times, something like that, but I'll go and find it. Any developments? And, Minister TG, if there are developments, it's very, very important that this development should be known to our clients, our overseas clients. And what are you going to do about it? I have another question about your communication strategy. Does your communication strategy reach all of our people as we want to enhance domestic tourism? Then, Chairperson, the Indian Ocean Rum Association, you are saying you are hosting that tourism experts meeting. Who are the role players, stakeholders in this? And I think it's an annually program. Did you measure at any time the impact that these meetings have? This on program 3, destination development, facilitation sessions hosted in each of the 9 provinces, that is on slide 29. Tourism has a concurrent function, and I know as national departments and provinces we have to work with each other. Now, this planning that you do together, do you monitor how it is implemented and the impact that it has, because it's costs involving to have this program, and we must get value for our money. We know some of our provinces are more advanced with regard to tourism. Do you have a focused look at some of the provinces that are not so often visited, and to give extra help to those provinces, such as my province, the Northern Cape, the Eastern Cape, those provinces. Then I also want to ask about the master plan. What is a master plan? What are the time frames involved in master plans? And I would concur with my colleague. I would like to know more about it, because as you know, put out here on slide 30, 3 of these master plans are in my province. And I'm especially interested in the one on the Orange River mouth master plan development. You know, South Africa is a water scarce land. And I know, for example, that the Department of Water and Environment, Department of Environment, for years are already planning to build a dam on the Orange River, very, very near to the Orange River mouth. And in this planning, have you, for example, engaged in it with our neighbors from Namibia? Because this could develop in a wonderful route from, say, from Springbok to somewhere in Namibia when we have this. Chairperson, this SKA, I think at this point in time, we as South Africa did not promote enough this wonderful, wonderful science project that we have. And I must admit, Chairperson, although this project is in my province, I haven't visited it. And you know the fact that Sutherland has such extreme weather, we should also promote that. Chairperson, this dinosaur route, it would stretch over a few provinces. I would just urge the committee to look how many provinces they can combine to make this really a route that is worth a while. Chairperson, I'm glad in Program 4 there is a mention on slide 46 about the tourism value chain with regard to Witsieshoek. We as a committee visited Witsieshoek. It's a very good facility. But I don't think it is enough communicated to tourists. And we have a vibrant community on both sides of the road. There's not enough entrepreneurs on the road. There could be cultural heritage routes and things like that. Then, Chairperson, I'll skip the others. The outreach programs. How effective are they? Then I want to come to the financial side and directly to the CFO Chairperson through you. 50%+ of the budget of the Department of Tourism is transferred to SAT. Now give me your honest meaning on this. Do you think we get enough value for money from that entity? And Chairperson, the role of the CFO in the department, how far does it stretch? Can the CFO in the department also intervene if he sees the entity isn't spending money well? Is he the ultimate person that must account for the monies received? Thank you, Chairperson. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the presentation by the department as led by the minister. Chair, let me start where the honorable member has landed on the issue of budget. But to put it in my own words, to say, how does this budget talk to unforeseen circumstances? like drought and also disasters that affect tourism. And also now that they are presenting this APP, let me ask a question that says, what makes this one, this year's APP, different from the other APPs that were presented, so that at the end there's no underperformance by the department and also by the entity. Chair, as they were presenting, in some programs, there is somewhere where they say they are to make some selection. Take an example of program 4, where they are saying they are to, in the first quarter, they are targeting 400 SMMEs to be funded. How will they make sure that come the first quarter, there are more than 400 applications meeting their requirements? Because you can target the 400 and you have the 400, but out of the 400, there are those that are not meeting the requirement. So you are not meeting your target that you targeted, because out of the 400, that is applications that are there, some are not meeting their requirement. How do you make sure that when you, in your implementation plan, you reflect spread, you reflect fairness, and you address imbalances of the past, and also you talk to transformation. And also, Chair, under Program 4, we are very much interested as politicians on the issues of capacity building and job creation, because those are low-hanging fruits. Sometimes you put numbers. Are you benchmarking from something? What informs the number? Let's have an example of where on slide 53, you are saying you are to enroll some, recruit some learners under those programs. You have such number under that province, or have such number under. What informs the number? Is there anything that, so that you are able to convince the next person about the number that is reflecting in your document? And also, Chair, where sometimes there was, some time back there was a report, I'm not sure whether by SAT nor yourselves, where you had difficulty in recruiting youth from the Northern Cape. What role are you playing to make sure that your counterparts in prom do as you expect? Because it's the target that you set for yourselves. You will not be meeting your target because of maybe the provincial department. What role will you be playing to avoid such instances come this financial year? Thank you, Chair. But let me not forget to say, we sometimes observe in your presentation that you address some of the challenges that we put forward as the committees. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. You saved in the best for last. thank you. I appreciate the buffet of programs presented by the department led by the Honorable Minister this morning. To me, they were quite nourishing, but I have a few concerns. In your presentation, you mentioned Port St. John's. I'm sorry, I'm going to be biased because it's my area. you mentioned Port St. John's as one of the developmental nodes for destination development. What exactly in the what exactly is in the pipeline for Port St. John's besides what is up here? What participation or response has been displayed by the community of Port St. John's? I'm asking this because Port St. John's has an immense potential for tourism development, and there's nothing of substance that so far has shown, using the president's endearing remark about tourism in South Africa. Nothing has shown through besides life-saving training. Nothing so far is visible that talks to the ocean's economy. Why are there no destinations? Why is Port St. John's not developed as a lucrative destination? Because it has so much potential. Number two, on observation, the department has a challenge in the uptake on various incentives provided to the industry. Now, most small operators are not really impressed by the overseas tours and the shows that you always have abroad, but they want to enter into the industry, except that they have got a lot of handicaps, one of which is finance. Why is the department not being creative by formalizing yourselves with what goes, what the people want in the area, and what the people have an appetite for? The other question is, the president in his maiden Sona speech, among many tourism heartening encouragements that he came up with, he pledged that government will, I quote, develop emerging tourism business, close quote. Now, given this transformation imperative in the sector, what measures has the department embarked on to advertise one of the help schemes, which is the Transformation Fund, and other financial forms of assistance, as very few people are conversant with such a help from the government, and their only deterrence is finance? Why is this a transformation fund not known by a lot of people? And what kind of advertising are you embarking on to make sure that all the small operators, or most small operators, are aware of what is going on in terms of financial assistance? Also, for the overseas countries, is there a potential for the overseas countries, that is our potential visitors? Do you digitalize the South African beauty as a destination in your marketing strategy?
I also have just two questions, DG and your team. You know, let me first welcome the presentation and say your APP is very informative. It does allow us to follow through on what has been planned, even throughout the year when you are reporting on your quarterly performances. It's commendable. But what comes to my mind is the issue of the programs that you rely on other stakeholders to implement them, the joint program. I'm almost hearing you coming here and telling us that we did not achieve this because the other partner did not play ball. And it's something that is recurring, that has been recurring on all the programs where you rely on other partners to achieve your target. So I want to know what forward planning have you done this time? Because we can't be hearing the same excuse over and over to say we are not meeting these targets because we had joined programs with other stakeholders. The other part is the jobs that you are targeting. You are targeting 35,000 jobs, and also I foresee a problem here where, because you most of the programs you rely on a service provider to implement them through the EPWP project, where the service provider would have not would let you down per se, and you don't achieve those targets. What forward planning have you put in this time to convince us to say, out of all the previous quarters where you reported that you could not meet the targets based on the service providers giving problems or pulling off the project, what are the mechanisms that you put in place this time to ensure that this does not delay and disenfranchises the opportunities for mostly young people who are relying on this project to be skilled and to make or earn a living? The third one is the issue of the biometrics attendance. It's just a clarity-seeking question, this one, because I'm just curious to understand how best are you going to implement this one, because if you are saying you're going to have a biometric attendance register and it's the service provider that does the that does the training and implementation of the EPWP project, how are you going to be monitoring that and how are you going to be implementing that? Will that be included maybe in your service level agreement with the service provider and so on? Those were just the three questions. Thank you.
I could either pick up on a couple, but I think it might be better if the DG and team respond, and then I'll add to and pick out on a few things that I specifically want to comment on, if that's okay. Yeah.
Thank you. I think we're going to split the questions. The last two sets of questions were very much destination related in terms of the program, and I think we'll start there, Shamina. Then we'll come to Murunga, then we'll come to Anemi. Then there's a question that I noted, Honorable Chairperson, that was asked to the CFO, but I think it's more of my question, which I will also respond to.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, DG. I think I'm going to start with the master planning question, and there have been two questions related to it. And in way of response, I think I'm going to respond with an example. Master planning is essentially creating a blueprint for progressive development of any site. So if we use the Cradle of Humankind as an example, in 2001, none of what currently exists was there. There was a very detailed master planning exercise, which involved taking into account the spatial planning information that existed, the links that needed to be created from a transportation perspective, the links that needed to be created from other infrastructure perspectives, so what kind of electricity supply, water supply, telecommunication supply did you need if you were putting in major investment in the site. There was a plan around transportation. What kind of roads did you need to put into place? What kind of cycling lanes did you need to put in place? There was work, because it's a World Heritage Site, that was done on environmental management. So what were the rules and the regulations that governed environmental management of the site? And how could you develop that site from a tourism perspective, taking into account all of those various environmental rules? What kind of marketing plan did you need to put in place to ensure that once the development came on stream, you actually put in place the resources that actively marketed the site? And a big element of master planning is about stakeholder relationships, managing stakeholder expectations. So what it is really saying, this is what we have in the space, this is what we eventually want it to look like, and how do we actually take what we have, build the bridge in between to make it look like what we want to see. So in the master plan for the Cradle of Humankind, there was a lot of work done related to all of those elements, infrastructure development, related to roads, electricity, water, transportation. There was also a lot of work that was done related to creating an attraction, which is now Marupeng and Sterkfontein, and how you link that then to the broader products that existed. At the time that the Cradle Master Planning started, there were only 64 tourism products. Various types of products, accommodation, some restaurants, etc. This is, we're looking at 2001. At the last count in that area, there are 415 tourism products. So essentially what that master plan did was to do the detailed planning to say, if we want to develop this place as a place that tourism is the key anchor, what are the key attractions we need to put in place? And what are the other supporting infrastructure that we also need to put in place that enables further tourism development? So the Cradle Plan was developed in 2001 and is being progressively implemented. I think that if we look back to what it was on Google Maps, and even if you look back to it conceptually, that vision is what has made that space what it is. So the master planning exercises that we are conducting in various provinces, largely linked to the coastal and marine tourism work, is about creating what currently exists in status quo, what our vision is to actually create tourism development, and then the bridge, if you call it that, with the various elements of work that allow us to take it from where it is to what we want it to become. So that is, in its large sense, the master planning exercise. The exercise is very detailed and very involved. So it does envisage, I say, underpinned by strong stakeholder and public participation, because it must be about what people in the area envisage for that, but also what the private sector then down the line actually is willing to invest in. Some of those elements will be public-private partnerships. Some of those elements will be working with state parties to develop where there is state land. Some of those will be related to community developments. But I think that the biggest challenge that we have, and it also relates to the question of why Port St. John's hasn't been developed, and why some regions, like the Northern Cape, like the Eastern Cape, haven't been developed, is the challenge we really have in those spaces is that there isn't a detailed plan. And without the plan, we risk having, firstly, no development, or we risk having incoherent development. So in terms of this work, this is the department is, of course, facilitating. We are supporting in terms of funding the planning exercise, but we are working in very close partnership with our public sector partners as well as our private sector partners, because the master plan can't be developed and implemented by ourselves. The exercise will begin this year, but I'm sure that members can appreciate, given the level of detail that needs to go into it, because it's creating the spatial layers that connect with what transport has and what they're planning. It's linking with the spatial frameworks for that area. And it's creating the actual detailed plans around what is the demand, and what is our supply, and how do we grow both those things for the area. We envisage that the exercises should take 2 years to complete, but we then will have a plan for progressively implementing and growing those various areas. To the question of do we support provinces where we know that there is less capacity and there are challenges, more than we support other provinces, yes. We provide support to provinces in line with their requests. How do we measure and monitor that? So through our forums that actually are our MinMec forums and MIFTEC, we have a governance development working group where we actually have a joint implementation plan with provinces. We agree on what our priority areas are with each province, and we essentially have quarterly meetings where we monitor broadly what our progress is. That then is, of course, at an official level, but there's a meeting of the DG with HODs that looks at it from a strategic level, and then, of course, the minister with MECs. That actually has oversight and responsibility for that plan of action, which we call the MinMec plan of action. But the work continues on a daily basis. So each project that we have conceptualized has a project team, which is comprised of the various stakeholders at a national, provincial, local government, and then, of course, at the private sector level. That project steering committee essentially drives the day-to-day work that is on each of those. So we have both at the project level the monitoring and oversight of what that is. We have alignment at the strategic level with what provinces say is their priority, what local government says is their priorities, and then we have it also at the political oversight and at a strategic leadership level between DGs, HODs, and the minister and MinMec. In terms of the Orange River, I think I've spoken to the broad concept of master plans, Honourable Member Adams, but essentially, again using the cradle as an example, if you look at the cradle master plan, there is very clear demarcations that are about what the district municipality looks like. The cradle also crosses over two provinces. The tourism master plan for the cradle actually has a tourism catchment area, which is very different to the provincial boundaries and to the demarcations that are district municipalities. The reason for that, as we all know, is that tourism doesn't have boundaries. So the planning for tourism does understand and take into account what exists as geographic boundaries, but it also looks at what makes sense for tourism and how you create the linkages across provinces. In the case of the Orange River map, it would be across border kind of engagements. So it doesn't look at things simply in terms of the border. So it will take into account what is possible in growing tourism much more broadly. With regards to the Indo-Atlantic route, I think that there is certainly also underpinned by strong stakeholder participation in each of the four provinces. And it is about being able to collaborate across provinces, but also within the provinces, and to take advantage of what the current initiatives are, similarly to be able to grow them down the line. Honourable Chair, to the question of what have we done differently in terms of implementation, I think that we've learned a lot of hard lessons over the years about where we have projects that are in partnerships. So on the projects that we have put into our APP for this particular year around planning, we have already agreed to and signed memorandums of understanding with our project partners. We have, in fact, already commenced some of the work around procurement for that, so that we are starting long before the financial year begins in order to make sure that we achieve those targets. Similarly, with the FTEs and the Working for Tourism, the numbers that we have put into our APP this year are based on projects that we have already begun procurement for or that we have already actually started. So it's based on the actual number of projects that we have and the FTEs that we expect to be delivering out of them. And we have done a lot of advanced planning related to it. Some of the challenges, as you say, are related to procurement. So this financial year, both for our skills development program as well as for the infrastructure program, we are working with pre-qualified panels of service providers so that we run our process upfront once according to proper supply chain management processes, but then we are more easily able to implement when we have a pre-approved set of panels after running an open tender process to be able to implement. I think I've addressed all of the questions related to destination planning. If there are any I haven't, I'll come back to them.
Thank you, Chief. I'm going to respond on the skills issues as well as the SMME matter, as well as the incentive program. The first one will be on the 400 SMMEs that we are not funding, but we are supporting them with 9 financial support in terms of workshops, in terms of training, so that they're able to be ready to access funding when they have made sure that their compliance issues in terms of paperwork are ready. So that's the first step. And out of the 400, they graduate into being able to go for trade shows, starting first with the trade shows within the country before they can even go into those international trade shows. So we are able to make sure that the training that we provide will make them to be able to sell their entities. So the 400 that you are having, we are not funding as a department, but we are making sure that they get ready to be able to get funded. At the same time, there was a question on how do we create awareness of what we are giving as support. We've been running through, actually yesterday it was the last province that we have addressed. We are doing enterprise development awareness, and it's not only on departmental programs, but as well as what other kind of support do they get from outside. Within those awareness sessions, we have financial institutions, both public as well as the commercial banks. They are there to further guide the SMMEs, what are the things that they need for them to be able to qualify in terms of funding. The issue of the incentive program not really picking up. We, in terms of the market access, I've already indicated that the SMMEs need to be graduating from the lower levels in terms of they don't have most of the things that are needed for them to can showcase in trade shows. So we'll be taking them up in terms of from the lower levels to the domestic, then to the international space. And for market access, they are really now seeing the web, and most of them are now coming forward to say they are getting business in the country as well as from outside. The other problem in terms of the uptake in the incentive is on the grading, which it has improved quite a lot. It was a problem before, but now with the new way of discounting, we are able to get those numbers. But it's an area that still needs to be improved. On the skills development, where do we get the numbers? The funding we're getting from EPWP and EPWP from the Department of Public Works, they're able to guide us with the type of funding. These are the number of jobs we'll want you to produce. So it's not the these are not the numbers that we only work on our own, but they are guided by the formula coming from the Department of Public Works. the capacity building, as well as the job creation, it was indicated these are low-hanging fruit, and already I've referred to it, what informs the numbers. I've indicated that the Public Works has a formula for that. On the issue of the community enterprises that we are going to do with the five areas, reference was made to Versus Hook. We are hoping, yes, the communities within the area, both across the road as well, will be able to come up with some services to supply to Versus Hook. Also, do we have a lodge that we built not far from Versus Hook, which we are also hoping it will serve as a hub for more communities to really do work or do service those two areas. Do we have records on the skills and the people that we have trained over the years? We have agreed, yes, we need to come up with that record by the end of April. We are hoping we'll be able to categorize them the way the Honorable Member has indicated, to say we need to indicate how many females, how many males, and even per province and across the various programs that we have done. I think I have summarized the questions related to those areas. Thank you, Chair. On the Northern Cape, in terms of the host employers to really support the young people with these various programs, it's an area that you said we need to go in and have a sit down, if I may say that, together with the province and the local municipalities and the business, in order to see how can we really see what are the problems that make them not to really take up what is coming within their area. So far, in this past 2 weeks, we have been there twice, last Monday and this past Monday. We are in Upington and this past Monday in Kimberley. So we are hoping that we'll be able to really get the most out of the host employers, especially because without them, it's going to be very difficult for our young people to get the practical training.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. On the questions related to Program 2, there was, Honourable Kumbuk, the question around slide 13,
yeah,
in terms of the target.
Yeah.
The DSA is in current nominal terms. So the GDP, the direct contribution will be in nominal. Indirect, usually we take from the WTTC figures because we don't do indirect ourselves. The TSA only calculates the direct contribution. In terms of how many tourists create a job, there is a bit of a... there are different methodologies in terms of how that is being calculated. There is not agreement in terms of that. What we do know from TSA is that 1 in 23 employed individuals are employed in the tourism sector. How many tourists create a job, that is a different question. The link between, as you said, the growth rate in the income versus the GDP versus the jobs, I think that is something that we can look at to see as you raised. I think that relates to that one. The Nordic countries, I think that's something that South African tourism has been doing. So in terms of the hard data, we will have to follow up with them to see what we found from that. Honourable Adams, in terms of the visa requirements, it's something that's still very much a priority in what we are doing constantly in terms of ease of access. The e-visas is part of the bigger picture. What happened not in the last year or two was the waiver on for Russia citizens to visit South Africa, and we can see in the figures the tourist arrival figures from Russia in 2017 increased to almost 51% of the visa waiver. So there's a clear indication that that is assisting us in getting more tourists from the country. But it's something that has not been concluded on yet. It's something that is on top of Minister's agenda as well, and that we are continuing working on. The IORA Indian Ocean Rim Association, that's a multilateral fora that South Africa is a founding member of. And in the recent years, tourism has been prioritized within the forum. It consists of 21 member states, mostly around the Indian Ocean, and 7 dialogue partners. So they are not necessarily members of IORA, but they have interest or capacity to assist. The Council of Ministers selects a chair for a period of 2 years, and South Africa was selected last year. So this is the process. And because tourism has been prioritized, it means that there should be a meeting of ministers of tourism, ideally. And before that can happen, there's a senior official meeting to prepare for that meeting. So we are starting the tourism focus now. So we would not necessarily have measured the impact because tourism has been formalized in that platform in the last 2 or 3 years. Honourable Member Sovita, you asked a bit of a broader question in terms of the selection. I think of how do we select youth for specific training. I don't know if Morongo addressed that, but in the one program that falls within in program 2, and that is the data collectors, the selection was, well, the criteria was you have to have an NQF level 5 qualification, being unemployed. We are looking for 600 youth, but we targeted 650 to allow for that number that might not adhere to the requirements or fall out later on. Selection is from the municipality, ideally that you will work in the municipality that you stay in. So that is our priority. And where we come, where we are not able to find enough graduates in the specific municipality, we will take it from other municipalities. But the first priority is to place you within the municipality that you are staying in, to assist us there. Honourable Bum, the digitalisation question is part of the marketing strategy, yes, and I'm sure South African Tourism, when they present to the committee, they will provide more information on their marketing strategy. The biometrics, yes, Honourable Chair, we would put it as part of the service level agreement for service providers that, you know, that is how we want to include the biometric system as soon as it's developed in the training programs or in the programs rolled out by EGWP. Thank you very much. You want to ask the selection?
Thank you, Chair. On our youth programs, the selection is based on, first of all, the age, between the age 18 years and 35. And they must be South African citizens. Most of the programs, they want grade 12, but for the hospitality youth, we have grade 11, and the training is accredited on with NQF. For the chefs, they're even able to have diploma to go 3 over the other levels as well. We advertise on papers, guided by the province and the municipality. We also put that on our website.
This is to try to ensure that there's transparency and fairness in our selection.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to respond to the question from Honourable Adam, who asked about our communication strategy, whether it reaches out to all our people. I just wanted to say that we do have a communication strategy which we revise annually, but it's also supplanted by our developmental communication strategy. And there we want to, number one, the strategy must support our objectives, but also speak to our program. So the developmental communication strategy is to ensure that the information reaches our communities, particularly the previously disadvantaged communities, including our enterprises that are in townships and rural areas. Now, we do that through various platforms and tools to make sure that we have a comprehensive approach to outreach. What we also started last year is to say for our events, whether it's launches or announcements of new programs, we want to link our Izimbizo to those events. That's to ensure that the information reaches our communities, who then would get the information to benefit from the department's programs and other initiatives. What we've also introduced last year is services on wheels. So when we have Izimbizo, we'll invite our partner departments, other agencies, to come in and provide information that's required by communities. We could be inviting SARS to come and talk about tax compliance, or we invite CEDA to come and talk about incubation. You know, it's various services, but we bring in our partners to work with us. We also access communities through community radio platforms. For example, we work with GCIS on the radio phone-in program, which gives us access to 400 community radio stations, but that's 6 million listeners who then have an opportunity to learn about our programs. We have also a multimedia outreach strategy to reach out to youth through our platforms, that's YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook, and there's a lot of engagement there because the youth want to find out about jobs, our internships, bursaries. So we try to use various strategies to reach out to the public. Our publications, for example, are in various languages. So while we may not reach everybody, but there's certainly an effort to make sure that we use diverse approaches to reach to as many people and communities as we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I think the colleagues have covered most of these questions. There's probably about one or two questions that I thought maybe I should also just give a little bit of context on. The SAT budget. SAT is our only entity with a huge responsibility to market South Africa across the globe. Furthermore, it has to market the country to its citizens for domestic tourism. It's quite a task. It's quite a huge task. Now, this money has to be used optimally. Previously, honorable members would know SAT had country offices. And they even moved from that and started to go to a hub strategy, which allows them to reach more countries in a particular region. So you would have an Asian office that would deal with China, Japan, Korea, and that area. This is a demonstration that they are mindful of the limited resources. It looks much from a percentage point of view
when it is compared to the overall budget that we get as a department. But in terms of actual money and the demand for that money in terms of what has to be done outside the country in particular, that becomes quite limited, if I could put it like that. Are we getting value for this money? We would want to believe so. Their strategy is quite targeted. There's quite a lot of relationships with trade. So there are ways of being able to actually see that it's not just putting money into awareness. There's also a little bit of effort to make sure that we are converting that to bring the tourists into the country. So that is really what we are buying out of this money. We have seen the growth. Of course, they are not going to be in a completely de-risked environment. There are a lot of risks. As we speak, as a country, we are faced with listeriosis. We have not yet seen the full impact of it, but I'm quite sure we're going to see the impact of that. It happens across the globe. Some countries are familiar with it because they experience it themselves, so they are not going to be scared of. But those that don't necessarily have this immediately, they would probably reconsider in some of the cases. And all this requires that continuous communication, continuous positioning of the message, and it costs. So that's really part of the reasons why they really have to be resourced to that extent. And all these other issues of drought, issues of crime, they directly affect us. And this is why one of the programs that we're going to be doing with regards to EPWP in the Working for Tourism program is the tourism safety monitors. So that would also come in there. It gives a bit of confidence. They are obviously not men and women, but they are a friendly face. They would be able to assist and so on. And with issues of drought, there's been a lot done, quite a lot, particularly by industry. We can do more, but we also know for a fact that these are natural phenomena. There is so much that the human beings can do. There are some hotels along the beachfront and also the waterfront stretch that have considered to actually set up their own water desalination plants. They will be self-sufficient. They will not be getting water at a later stage. They won't be getting water at all from the municipality. So these are things that people are doing. They are quite mindful. They've been very responsible in the manner in which they are consuming, whether it is retrofitment. Some of this retrofitment can reduce just from the shower heads and so on. You can reduce up to 75% of the consumption that comes with showers and so on and so forth. So these are some of the things that they are doing, but how we message it, and I think SAT has been very, very good with this, how we take the message out of the country and how we are managing this, it's much more critical. I was using the GEMS in at the Cape Town International. And there was a lot of international tourists that were in there. When they went to the taps were dry. Mm-hmm. And I looked there, we didn't have a sign that said, use the sanitizer. Mm-hmm. I probably spent about 5 to 10 minutes standing around and just explaining that when you get in, you use the sanitizer. It's equally effective. We are not using water. It's part of water saving. And so that's not sustainable. my work station is in Pretoria. So it's really just getting this some of those systems in place, and so, but they are going to deal with it from the airport side. So these are some of the issues and so on. But we need to work collectively, honourable members, in their respective constituencies. The message should go there to say, this is what we are faced with. When it comes to matters of crime, it's something that, as tourism, we'll do what we can, but it's a broader issue as well. The other issue that I just wanted to highlight is the issue pertaining to what is different about this ABP. The APP is a accumulation of lessons. We are learning every year. So we try to get a little bit better than the previous year, each year. So that's really our approach. We try, we listen, we go and evaluate on the ground, and we come back and we see this has not necessarily worked well for us. What then do we change? What then do we? But all of it still supporting exactly the same strategy. So in terms of the actual focus, we're still focusing on getting our inclusive growth. We're still focusing on getting better contribution to the economy, which is in a sustainable way. But when it comes to the specifics that we're going to do, so if you take what Shamila, for instance, was explaining all around the planning and so on, it's a lesson we learned that even marketing some of the investment opportunities would not have been ready because the planning work had not been done and exhausted. So we learned from that, then we have to bring that in, and then we go to the next. We have learned that there is confidence that can actually be drawn from having these monitors on site, we bring in that. So it's those lessons, including the actual implementation. I think the chairperson was really straight to the point about some of those lessons, so which then have been integrated into this. I will hand over to you.
There was one question on information about Port St. John.
Indeed, Minister, we didn't. I think, Shamila, you just going to the projects that are in the Marine and Coastal Tourism Plan.
So the Port St. John's initiative, actually, province has indicated that they are prioritizing Port St. John's as an area for development. They have not yet done a complete planning exercise to say exactly what elements are there. So for now, the work that we're doing in Port St. John's is around improving the beach infrastructure that exists on our blue flag beaches, and then doing the detailed master planning exercise. The project and the emphasis on Port St. John's to Coffee Bay, so it's connecting those two spaces, comes from the coastal and marine tourism area of work. I think all stakeholders at that Coastal and Marine Tourism Lab agreed that that was a priority area of development, that there was very little that had currently been done. And the reason that a very little has been done is because there isn't actually a plan for Port St. John's. So there is a plan around some of the beaches and around some of the beach infrastructure, but it's not at a level that we can now take it directly into implementation. There's still further detailed planning that needs to be done, for example, to get the detailed designs, to get the EIAs approved, etc., for that area. So Port St. John's, I don't have, Minister, the exact details of all of the elements that go into it, but it comes.
He's going for a wee when he must go chickish.
So that essentially is the issue with it. I mean, It is work that we are doing with the province. The province has prioritized Port St. John's, but like I say, they haven't commenced with detailed planning. So it's work with the province as well as the local authorities, as well as the private sector, for a plan that is progressively implemented. I mean, the reason I started with the cradle as an example of master planning is if the province at that point in time didn't have a vision for tourism, that area would not have been developed. So that's the reason that we as the state are investing in the planning exercise. We may not fund all of the work that comes out of it, because the state doesn't have an endless pot of money. So essentially, what we've learned from the work across the country, but also across the world, is that the state must invest in that detailed planning. It must also invest in the enabling infrastructure that allows people to access those sites. And once the state has done that and invested in its own state-owned properties, the private sector will then come on board. So it's an element of state investment first in the planning and enabling infrastructure that then allows the private sector to come on board. It's not a quick exercise. So the Cradle of Humankind, the reason I use it as an example, was 2001 that detailed master planning was done. We're now sitting 17 years later, and you can see the impact in that area of that planning. But it started off with a vision that essentially has taken the last, that was very rapid because the province invested so much. But it took at least 5 years before Marupeng actually was built as the anchor, and then for the surrounding things to develop. So that growth takes time. I mean, similarly with the Midlands Meander, it didn't happen over time, immediately. It took 20 years for the Midlands Meander to happen. Soweto's development is from 1976, so tourism development needs a plan, and then it will materialize if there's a plan, and that's what we're working on there.
Thank you. If I may then add, I think Shamila just added Midlands Meander because she saw the Honourable Member come back. We know that's what he's really interested in. But just to add to that one very, because I think Shamila has gone into it in some detail, but it's important to understand these master plans and related to your question, Comrade Chair, you know what I mean, Madam Chair, these master plans, actually, I want to go a bit further than Shamila went. The components of the master plan that emerged, like the fixing of roads and possible rail connection, etc., not in Port St. John's necessarily. It's not just we may not be able to. We certainly will not be responsible for the implementation of all components of a master plan, because we're dealing here with three spheres of government. Some things are going to be specifically responsibility of municipality. But they'll have a master plan. It acts as a kind of a catalyst. Because if we take the areas of greatest potential that are underexploited or unexploited, probably the Wild Coast is the part of the country with the greatest potential that is not fully exploited. So, and Port St. John's is one good example. But exactly as Shamila says, start off with a plan and get commitments of people in the plan. And that the developments then are not kind of arbitrary and ad hoc. It's there's a framework for whatever development takes place with some commitments, but of course we cannot ensure that the municipality meets its end of the bargain. But at least they know what are the critical things that have to be done in order to facilitate tourism growth in a particular area with tourism potential. On your chairperson, related to that, we will deliver on these APPs. And we won't blame anybody else. So the APP will not say, tourism is going to flourish in Port St. John's and flourish between Hornicliffe Bay and Port Narrows, but a master plan will be there. So the deliverable from our side we will deliver on, and we won't blame other people for non-delivery. And that's a commitment I make, and so you can shout at me if we fail, not at the DG, because he didn't go as far as I went in saying that we really will deliver on these APPs. We've gone through them one by one, very carefully. So I've asked the question, so what are you going to do in quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, on every one of these identified targets in the APP. We've gone through every one of them in the short period that I've been back. But the only thing where we will not necessarily take blame, it's what the DG referred to, is the matters that are entirely beyond our control, so, and that's mostly the difficulty that SA Tourism has. Because we can talk about master plans, we can talk about numbers of people trained, we can talk about incentive programs and all sorts of things. But the SA Tourism is measured by the numbers of tourists that either travel domestically or come to South Africa. And there are definitely things, so definitely things beyond their control that will determine these numbers. But they, you know, you can interrogate them on that when you have a separate session with the with SA Tourism. But we're constantly analysing numbers and trying to work out, you know, either because of successes, because we have a great increase in numbers, like we have with Russia, from Russia, and so we want to know to what extent was the visa waiver a major contributor to a massive increase in 2017 rather, over 50% increase in the numbers of visitors from Russia. And lo and behold, there was a visa waiver in Russia, but could there be other factors? These need to be analyzed, studied and analyzed. New Zealand, 17% decrease in 2017. Was it because we suddenly imposed visas, or were there other things? I can't think of anything else, but in all of these cases, they need to be researched and analyzed, and they could be not just visas, they could be factors beyond our control. A particular source market like China is very safety and health conscious. So as soon as with Ebola was a typical case, there was a massive decline in tourists from China during that year, 2015, when there was the Ebola outbreak, although we didn't have any Ebola. So I think the DG is correct. We don't quite know the consequences and the effect of the listeriosis outbreak. I don't think it's anything as big as the Ebola at the time, but nonetheless, it's going to be a factor, especially some markets being more sensitive. Going right back to the man that went outside for a comfort break, I don't think your question, to be honest, is not adequately answered. But if you compare with us, because I think you're asking very valid questions.
Which one?
Your very first question, you know, about are these figures inflation adjusted and all of these things. I think we need to just go back on all of these targets and the sense to the extent to which they are properly aligned with each other. So let's undertake to do that and to come back and reply, because I think it's a very valid question. The I think it's already been answered, the question about whether we just do master plans, whether we're facilitating. I think the final result, if all there's a master plan now, this is also Honourable Krumbach's answer, our question, there's a master plan, there's identification of roles, included in the master plan, by the way, in answer to your question about SKA and Sutherland, included in the master plan is, of course, a marketing plan as well. Because this is not these are not development plans, spatial development plans. They're spatial development plans with a tourism focus. So there's nothing with a tourism focus that doesn't include marketing. But yes, indeed, if everything is in place, the intention is not for us to do everything. The intention is to create conditions for opportunity for private sector. We don't open guest houses. Individuals open guest houses or build hotels, or whatever else other product might be, there might be opportunity for. On the Youth Employment Service, the answer is, you know, acronym YES, and answer YES. There is inclusion of the tourism sector in that. I think it's a very exciting program which the President launched yesterday, and I think we will take it even a step further. Because the 300,000 jobs, they're short-term jobs, but it's rolling. So it's 3,000 for a year. But that could also be assistance in the form of setting up SMMEs or jobs elsewhere if the company can't absorb. But that's what the private sector has committed itself to in addition. These are additional jobs, not just, well, we will find a job but displace somebody else. These have to be additional jobs. And, of course, training opportunities and workplace experience, etc. Yes, there is a a tourism component of it, which we need to engage on more robustly. I will be meeting with the CEOs. If you know, a lot of these things came out from the CEOs initiative, which happened a couple of years ago, and we started our own because there was a tourism component of the CEOs initiative, and we started our engagement with the CEOs. So we think and we would hope that we would be able to go even beyond this in our engagement with the tourism sector, because we've already resuscitated that, and there is a meeting planned with the CEOs, I think in a week or so from now. Just to add to the question of visas, it just struck me, Chairperson, that let me say that there's a meeting due between myself and the Minister of Home Affairs. We look forward to that meeting. I think the Minister has come in with he wasn't quite on the sabbatical that I was on, you know, but he was placed somewhere else, and always good, gives you a good opportunity to look back to your previous portfolio, come up with some fresh thinking, fresh energy, if you like. And I think the Minister Gigaba is quite energized to try to do what the President actually instructed us to do, and that is to address the regulatory barriers so that tourism can grow. And obviously one of the important regulatory barriers would be visa requirements. So I can say that the on some of the things that were of concern to us, there hasn't really been much progress, but we are both together determined to very clinically identify what are the actual problems and what are the possible solutions. And we will report back periodically from our side to the committee to say how we are progressing in dealing with this particular challenge. But just a thought, Chairperson, is that there's nothing stopping the portfolio committee from doing hearings, for example. It doesn't have to be exclusively on visas, but it's an area. Doing hearings, taking hearings from some of the bigger players and say, to what extent have these visas or do these visa requirements impact on your business? Do you have any ideas? What do you propose? And to have a whole morning session of hearings, so that one hears not from the minister or the department, but hears directly from stakeholders in the industry. And it's an idea. Honourable Adams, yeah, I think we will try to focus on the provinces that are not so often visited. We tend to do that in Tourism Month anyway. We know that we don't have to do an awful lot to promote Cape Town, but we think Cape Town, because it just is the most beautiful city in the world. I'm sure it is. I think it is. I'm talking about city, so you're going to tell me, Springbok is much more beautiful. But we don't have to do an awful lot to convince people that here is Cape Town's known, Kruger National Park is known. There are these hidden gems and other tourist attractions that are less well known. On the other hand, we will use the Table Mountain symbol to promote South Africa, of course, because it's so well known and it's so attractive. On the issue, then, I partly touched on it, the SKA in Sutherland, but I agree, so that it's not just the tourism message. It's the message of achievement and of excellence that we are hosting the biggest, we are the host country for the biggest radio telescope in the world, and probably, one of the biggest scientific projects the world has ever seen, and it's massive. And Sutherland, of course, is a different kind of telescope. I think the intention here, there are number limitations. You can't have unlimited numbers, so these all have to be taken into account, Shamila, I'm sure you are. Very few people will be able to physically go to the dishes and see the dishes, but you can have an interpretation center in Carnarvon that tells them about this project, even if they can't physically go and see the dishes, because it would be more possible if there were tar roads, but we're not quite there. The problem is the radio reception, so you don't want too much traffic. On the dinosaur route, actually, at the moment, it's not a route as much as a specific dinosaur interpretation center.
I have already clapped Victor. I can clap him again, you know, because it's taken a long time. It should have been done a long time ago. There are all sorts of obstacles, etc. But the good thing is it's in the APP with clear targets and frameworks for getting it going and construction starting. So because we receive money, a lot of money from the, I can't remember how much, from the EU for the specific project. The on the But to Zilk, I just think a good general point. We could help, you know, set up these, I don't need to share with you that we've had success stories in the SRI and some SRIs and some disaster stories. We know that, we've shared that. We have to try and help exit from these not so successful stories and try to bring in the necessary interventions to rescue them if possible. But on cases like Witsizhuk, which is probably one of the more successful stories, we must get SA Tourism to market these places more effectively. So we're going to take that up. Witsizhuk and others, we'll take that up. Because we can't run the thing for them, but we can help get bums and beds in those places. So can you, by the way. Nearly there. Honourable Bam Mugwanya, the issue of small operators going to participate in these trade shows, we haven't necessarily had that feedback that they weren't so impressed, but it'd be useful to get that feedback. I should just say that, and then responding to people's actual needs, of course you're right, you don't say, here, we want to take you to a tourism trade show, if your particular need or priority as a business is something quite different. But in fact, anyone who has gone on these trade shows, it's on their request. So they've specifically wanted to go to a particular trade show, and then they've had to meet the criteria. And then it's up to them how they do business. Some product owners are not going to get the same interest as other product owners. That's the nature of it. But they have indicated that they want to go to a particular trade show. Am I right, PG? That's the way it works. On the transformation fund, I'm going to ask the committee if you can just bear with us a little bit. It's a very important intervention, and it's true that this fund is not so well known. But Minister Khasa did mention it in a budget speech last year. And there was an immediate sort of flurry of responses, etc. So even before all of the details have been finalized with the National Empowerment Fund, applications have already come in. So there's a real interest in it. But because we have a partner there, you know, so it's a combination from our side of the beneficiary or the participant or the successful applicant bringing in some of their own finance, of course, and then a grant component from the department, an equity possibility from the National Empowerment Fund, plus a loan from the National Empowerment Fund, a loan that they wouldn't necessarily easily be able to get without the grant. So they all speak to each other. But because we've got a very important partner in the National Empowerment Fund, which leverages the small amount of money that we've got, there will be uptake, Chairperson, on this one. We can see already there will be uptake. Our biggest problem is going to be that we have too little funds to do as much as we would like to do in order to achieve this transformation objective. And maybe over time we will be able to present a good case for additional funds with your support, of course. But for the moment it's funding constraint, and I think then the leveraging component becomes very critical. So that with the sort of 50 million rand or whatever it is, that it translates into quite a lot more money if you add the loan and if you add the possible investment or equity share that the National Empowerment Fund would take up. Because we have a partner, all of the agreements had to be struck with the partner, and we will certainly in the next session, I think there'll be a formal launch of this, and of course a formal invitation for applications, which will come in the next couple of months once all of the little loose ends are tied up. And we will certainly in next session give a more comprehensive briefing to the Portfolio Committee on this one.
And that was my addition, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister and DG. Yes, I would continue to take follow-ups, honourable members, but I have a request, DG. Perhaps when you come to the Portfolio Committee on the 2nd of May, to give us a briefing on the NTSS to ensure that you unpack this this table, so that we can be able to better understand. Because I was also not partly covered by the responses from what Honourable Kronborg has asked. But if you unpack this table, we would be able to better understand. Honourable
Kronborg. Thank you very much, Chair, for supporting me on that, and also to the Minister who indicated the same thing. That's really great that we can have this kind of relationship in the committee where we address these issues as a team. I have to leave, but I just wanted to make one suggestion, and it's very similar to what both you and the Minister have said. The master plan inputs that we've had today are actually quite exciting. And I think much like we've addressed the SRI projects in this committee, which is to say, what are we spending? What are we getting back? What is the net impact on the fiscus? And then adding in qualitative factors like unemployment. There may be people that gain employment through the SRI projects, which whose salaries may be below the taxable threshold, but still that's a net social gain for the country. I think it'd be good, we've got a number of these master plans, Shamila, and we should look at each one and say, well, what was the input from transport? Because some of it will be roads, telecommunications, there's obviously electricity, et cetera, et cetera. What did the department put in? What was contributed by local governments? And let's look at the total cost of these projects. Let's look at how they've panned out, bearing in mind that some of them, as you've quickly pointed out, have a long history, and it takes time to generate whatever you want to achieve. And then come up with, like I've been arguing for a long time now, a sort of cost-benefit analysis so that we as a committee can see these are the things that actually work well and these are the things that work not so well. So when we look at projects in the future, which involve this kind of master plan analysis and supportive facilitator frameworks that you expounded on this morning, we can say, well, we should be picking these 5 or 10 top projects rather than an alternative 5 or 10 because we know which are the models that are the most effective. And some of the inputs you can measure the jobs created, and you can measure the net benefit or whatever the benefit is to the fiscus, and we can make some kind of qualitative judgments about employment that's been, you know, reduced or job opportunities created, even if it doesn't have a taxable benefit for the state. But at least have some kind of idea, because just saying we've done this and done that probably doesn't give us enough financial information to be able to make good, considered, well-motivated proposals in the future is what we'd like to see. So that's a request through you, Chair, to the department. If we can perhaps get that kind of feedback, perhaps along the same lines that the Minister suggested on page 13, so we're in a better position to make better decisions as we go forward. I'm all in favour. I'm not trying to say we shouldn't do it. Quite the opposite. I'm saying let's understand it better so we can actually roll it out more effectively and use the best case scenarios and our best practices going into the future. So if you wouldn't mind excusing me, but that's just an appeal now, and I hope you'd consider that. Thanks.
Thanks, Honourable Kronborg. You are excused. I was also going to add something on the master plan to say perhaps because we've heard from your presentation that the Port St. John's does not have a proper master plan. The province does not have a proper master plan. Perhaps it would be proactive on our side to write to the province to ensure that they start putting together a master plan that will include the entire coastal area that links Coffee Bay and Port St. John, so that we don't wait for that, because we might wait for 5 years or wait for so long, and it could be on the for the benefit of the people of Port St. John's and the Eastern Cape at large if we where to put these master plans in place so that we know that in the future there will be something that is done. Because we can't come here and continue to say there's no proper planning around ensuring that these coastal areas are developed optimally, taking it from what the President has said, to say we need to leverage from all the opportunities that tourism has to offer. That would be also to you, Secretary, to say let's be proactive, right, to the Eastern Cape, and if need be, let the department assist them, you know, take good practices from other, what you call, coastal areas that are developed to say perhaps they can learn one thing or two from that. That's just an addition to what Honorable Kronborg has indicated or has, what you call, submitted. Honorable Adams?
Ms. Chairperson, I couldn't concur more with what you've suggested now. And perhaps they should also look at the capacity that that municipalities at the province have with the development of that plans and apply additional capacity from within the department. But mine is on the funding from the EU. I'd like to know what the terms and conditions are.
Over to you, DGs.
Thank you, Chairperson and all Adams. The EU funding is specific to the projects funded. So we only have two projects. The first one is the dinosaur project. The second one is the Barian School project. We are expected to report against a very specific framework that is prescribed by them. It's largely linked to the logical framework approach. And in each of these projects, we are doing that in partnership with the custodians of the sites. So if it's the Golden Gate Dinosaur Project, we do it with SANParks. Now the condition there is that SANParks is supposed to be the lead agency with regards to being able to do all these other things, whether it's procurement and so on and so forth. But we do that together. It's not mixed at all with the appropriation from Parliament. It's got its own separate. But what we're doing, how do I put it? As we're discussing it, we're saying the people that will be doing that work is us. You have appropriated for us to be paid to do it. So that there is a that symbiotic relationship. But in the main, it is ring fenced. It is specifically for those projects. It's got its own accountability mechanisms that are totally separate. We have got to make sure that we give reports to National Treasury, which in turn also then gives reports to the EU.
And it's quite a lot of money, as you've got
done. It is, Minister, because it's 124, the Dinosaur Interpretation Center, and it's 450, how much is that? 56 for the Pavian's Kloof, which is both an interpretation center as well as a hiking route.
DG, I think what brings about this question is because when you presented to us the GTEC project, you excluded the two projects that are funded by the EU. Perhaps you can just write to us as a committee and give us few details so that we can read for ourselves and then we'll understand better what's the relationship and how the project is, with what stage it is, so that we keep ourselves informed about those two projects specifically. Honourable members, do we have anything? If we do not have anything, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you, Minister, leading the team of the department that came to us and gave us such an informative APP coupled with discussions that were fruitful. Now we understand better on how, what you plan for and how you plan to achieve those targets. We will be holding you accountable as you come to a report on your quarterly performance on where you are and how you've spent the budget that's been allocated to you. I would also take this opportunity to allow you to excuse us. We just have some few housekeeping to do for ourselves. And may you have a safe journey back to Pretoria.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we've got an invitation from the CEO of the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. He's inviting the committee to participate in the WTM Africa World Tourism meeting. That will be in the Cape Town International Convention Center on the 18th, 19th, and 20th of April. Now, they are inviting the committee members to attend that gathering. Also, they are also inviting three people from the committee that will participate in the panel discussion. Given what has followed since the State of the Nation address by the President. Now, yes, a day before yesterday and yesterday, they have been harassing my office that we must try and provide a response. Now, our consistent response was that we can't do without given a mandate by the portfolio committee what to do about this matter. But the matter is on the agenda of the committee, and the committee is sitting today. So we will ask the chair for the committee just to look at the matter formally so that we can have an official response that will go to them. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Secretary. What I found problematic around the invitation for the three members is that they specifically say that it should be three members from the three different political parties. So it should be ANC, DA, and perhaps EFF or IFP. Now, my concern around that is, you know, we can go there and speak in different tongues, you know. We would not have a committee position. So in fact, I foresee that they are not inviting the committee; they're inviting individual political parties. So that's my issue. Perhaps we can say Jeremiah's write back to them and ask them to clarify that fact. Because if they are inviting the committee, it should be a person representing the committee, perhaps in a panel of discussions with business and other stakeholders. Because if you allow us as different political parties, you'll find Kronborg or Force talking about Cape Town and something else and having their policy perspective on a particular issue, and we are also having our own policy perspective. That's the ambiguity that I found in this correspondence. And then I felt that we should just share it amongst us as a portfolio committee. Well, I wanted them to be also part of us discussing this thing, because we know that we are representing different political parties, and if such an invitation comes, they've got their own policies, we've got our own policies. So it's not an invitation per se that I would say is to the committee, it's to different individual political parties. And I don't know, I would ask your guidance, members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you also for involving us in the debate around the invitation. You see, as Parliament, we use our own quota. We can't be given a quota by somebody who's inviting us. We are a committee here. We are able to work together as parties, but we can't be invited as such. What we say to the outside world must be something that is agreed upon or workable to all of us as a committee. I would propose, Chair, that we write back to them to say we are not comfortable as a committee of parliament to attend such an event given their requirement that's stated there in the invitation. I was to propose, without you giving us the explanation, I was to propose that you represent the committee. If there was no such a determination, you represent the committee in that platform. But now I'm confused that there is something that they put forward that there must be parties. If they want us as parties, they must write to the chief whip. If they want us as parties.
Thank you, Chair. As the Committee on Tourism, we have a mandate, Chair. And that mandate, given to us by the Constitution, should always be in front. If they want different views from different political parties, they should set the invitation in that way and invite political parties to come and express them on tourism. I find it a bit disturbing for them to come and say what we must do. So, Chairperson, in your letter, please say this is our mandate. We cannot adhere to their request. If they want it done in that way, they should invite different political parties.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I think Jerry has summed up the discussions on how we should respond to the letter of Tourism Business Council of South Africa, and this is how we are going to respond to them. And let me take this opportunity and appreciate the fact that we stayed throughout the committee, given the fact that we are in the week of Good Friday, when we should be rushing back to go to our respective congregations and churches. And at this point, I would say the meeting is adjourned.